First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the chance to talk here. It's my great pleasure. So today I'm going to talk about the Alexandrov central inequalities for core mass integrals of k plus 1 convex domains. This is a joint work with my advisor, Alice Chang. So let us begin by talking about a little bit of the background. So in convex geometry, so people look at the Minkowski's mixed volume, which is defined in the following way. So if we look at a convex domain omega, and suppose we have the unit ball B, and we look at the set omega plus TB, where it's a new set, and you look at the volume of this guy, and there's a theorem in convex geometry saying that this is a polynomial in terms of t, where t is just a positive scalar. So in this way, we can define the coefficients of this polynomial by wk of omega. This is the so-called the mixed volume. And if you look at when t equals to 0, of course, w0 of omega is just the volume of omega, like here. And if you do the first variation, it gives you the area, as you expect. And if you do the second variation, basically, that gives you the mean curvatures integral. And so on and so forth. Actually, in general, this wk of omega could be given by the integral of sigma k minus 1 of the second fundamental form, where sigma k simply means the k-th symmetric function. And this second fundamental form, if you diagonalize it, basically you have the principal curvatures. So this is just the definition. As simple examples, like sigma 1 of L is just the mean curvature, and sigma 2 looks like that, and sigma 3 looks like that, and so on and so forth. So as you might have noticed, there is isoparametric inequality between W0 and W1. This is classical isoparametric inequality. So the question is that whether there is some generalized version of isoparametric inequality between WK with WK plus 1. And the answer of this question is yes. And this is implied by the Alexandrov-Senko inequality. So what it says is that wk of omega over some dimensional constant here to a power in order to normalize it is increasing in terms of k.
Way, this particular k is called Alexandrov.
Alexandrov, you mean? Oh, really? Okay. So with
standard.
Okay, so without mentioning Senko? All right. So if we rewrite it in terms of our definition as the integral of the symmetric function, this is the star k inequality. Okay? When k is from 1 to n, and when k is equal to 0, this is the classical isoparametric inequality. So if you look at this inequality, the natural question asked is that whether, so this inequality is proved for when omega is convex. So is it possible to remove the convexity assumption? It's the natural question to ask. And why do people think so? It's because, for example, the classical isoparametric inequality does not require any convexity assumption. And also, it's because there is a famous Michael-Simon inequality, which is proved back in the 1970s. And I will talk about the state precise statement a little bit later, and it doesn't require convexity either. So to generalize this Alexandrov central inequality, Alexandrov inequality to non-convex domains, we certainly need some like curvature conditions to look at. So one way to look at it is by looking at the so-called K-convex domain, which is defined in the following. So suppose we look at a domain inside Euclidean space again, and we say the second fundamental form satisfies the gamma K condition if sigma 1 all the way up to sigma K of second fundamental form is positive. Okay, this is a class of non-convex domains that we're going to look at to prove the kth level of the Alexandrov inequality. Here we mean strictly positive, but actually it's going to be okay if you just assume positive, non-negative, right? So previous results in this direction to generalize the star K inequality are the following two. So one of the theorem is proved by Pengfei Guan and Junfang Li in 2009, and their result says that if omega is K convex, and if we also assume it is star shaped, basically it means that you don't have much topology to play with. Okay. Then the star, the Alexandrov inequality is true all the way up to level K. So the method they used is by the flow method. So here you see this flow is given by some geometric quantities of the fully nonlinear operator. And in particular, when k is equal to 1, this is our familiar geometric flow, which is the inverse mean curvature flow, because sigma k minus 1 of L is just constant, and sigma k of L is mean curvature. So it's mean curvature, inverse mean curvature flow. And the mean inverse mean curvature flow has been systematically studied by Huisgen and Yomanen, and what their theorem could imply is that when omega is outward minimizing, then star 1 holds. So outward minimizing, so you haven't seen any one convexity here, but outward minimizing already implies that it is one convex, and it is a little bit stronger than that. Right, so the outward minimizing means that if you have a domain which is inside another domain, then the boundary of this domain wouldn't be bigger than the boundary of that one. So in particular, what it means is that this shape, this example, could not happen, because if you shift it, you have a smaller boundary, but you have bigger volume, like that. Say that again? This is like a few pages afterwards in order to answer his question. So I have talked about the Huisgen's result on star 1 inequality. Okay, so the well-known problem is that the Michael-Simon inequality that I have just mentioned, which is proved on a little bit more generalized hypersurface, a submanifold of Euclidean space with it could be up to higher codimensions, and they proved a sublevel type inequality. Basically, you see inside you put some arbitrary like positive function there, and on the right hand side you see if you don't have the second term, then this is just the sublevel inequality, but since it is on manifold, then you have the mean curvature comes in. Okay, so the corollary of Michael-Simon inequality is basically if you just look at the codimension 1 hypersurface, which is the boundary of the domain, and if it is one convex, then the star 1 prime inequality is true, where I put a prime here in order to emphasize in this inequality the constant is not optimal. And it is a well-known problem that well-known question is that what is the best constant in this star 1 prime inequality? Okay. All right. So the main result that Alice and I had obtained is that we looked at the k plus 1 convex domains. And in this situation, the star prime m inequality will hold all the way up to the level k. Basically, again, I use the prime to star m prime to emphasize in this inequality we didn't obtain the best constant, but we know that there is a dimensionally there is a constant there which is only depend on the dimension and k. I think people believe it is true for the constant for the sharp constant.
So for the case of convex, what if you have just ratio of volumes of gradient ball?
Right. Right.
And this constant, you don't know that it at least correct, no?
This
constant may be true. You don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Perhaps it is both constant.
Right, right. Because there are some topology constraints. I haven't seen an official conjecture about that, but right. I believe that the ball is still the best thing. But the star shape cannot involve like any topology, things like that, right? I guess if this inequality is true, then it should be true with best constant. This is my guess. And it's not official. Okay, in the special case, when k is equal to 1, we only assume omega is in gamma 1 cone. And in the special case, when k is equal to n, we only assume omega is in gamma n cone. So we don't really want k plus 1 anymore. And by similar similar method, we can prove the Michael-Simon type inequality. Basically, we can put the function here, and this is a subleft type inequality. And on the right-hand side, you see sigma k of L times U, and also some derivatives in terms of U. And it looks pretty good because when you add more derivatives on U, you get less index here in the sigma I of second fundamental form. So in the particular case when L is equal to k minus 1, the inequality looks like that. And also in this inequality, if you just look at the case when k is equal to, when L is equal to 0 and when k is equal to 1, this gives you back the Michael-Simon inequality. That's why we call it the Michael-Simon type inequality. All right. So the proof of these two theorems are both rely on the method of optimal transport. And the way that we construct the way that we construct this mass transport is followed the method that Castiglione has used in order to prove, in order to give a new proof of Michael-Simon inequality. So there are, sorry, I lost one page, but on that page, what I put is the previous works to prove geometric inequalities by using the mass transport. So this method was firstly introduced by Gromov, where he proved the classical isoparametric inequality by constructing a map, but he doesn't use the optimal transport map. And later on, Professor McCain has a work on proving the Brown-Minkowski inequality by using the optimal transport map. And then I guess there are many results in this direction. Also, Professor Meerman has a work on proving the Alexandrov-Fentrow inequality by using the optimal transport map. And recently, Professor Villani and his co-authors has used this method by proving the Sharp Gagliardo-Sobolev inequality. And also Castilian has used the method to give another proof of the Michael-Simon inequality. I'm sorry, I lost that page, but it's fortunate I can still remember all the results. So the maybe I put it later. So from now on, I will just state a little bit of the way that how does Castilian's proof work, and from there we're going to talk about our proof of the theorem. So basically, the optimal it's here. You see? All right. So the optimal transport method, so basically you look at two domains on the Euclidean space, D and D star, and you look at a probability measure on each of them. And the optimal transport map basically wants to minimize this cost function. And the Bernier's theorem says that there is a map which is given by a convex potential. And this map is the minimizer of this problem. So let me sketch Castilian's proof by using the Bernier's map. So basically, he looks at a domain in Rn plus m in the Euclidean space, and he projected. So just use the projection map P of E down to a flat n linear space. So you get this measure on the manifold would be projected down to the linear space, and we define just by using this notion P E sharp F. So this is my first domain with the first measure, and my second domain is just a Euclidean ball with the Lebesgue measure, normalized Lebesgue measure. So by Bernier's theorem, there's a potential, and which is convex potential, which transports this measure to that measure. So with this relationship, you get the equation, the measure preserving equation. And since this map could be extended upstairs, so it's equal to the determinant over the Jacobian of this map squared. On the other hand, if you look at a map on the Euclidean space upstairs, then you can relate its discussion with the second covariant derivative with respect to the metric on this submanifold, and the relation there is, I mean, the relation there is connected by the second fundamental form. Okay, just by using this construction, we will get this main inequality, and where f is just the probability measure upstairs, and Jacobian of E is less times Jacobian of E is less or equal than determinant of the Hessian of the extended Brownian's map. And from there, we just integrate over the manifold, and we do the integration by parts, and we use the fact that this map is mapped to the Euclidean board. That's why the gradient cannot be bigger or equal to 1. Therefore, by using this way, it proves the star 1 prime inequality, which is the Michael-Simon inequality.
And I guess you lose the listing,
right? That's where you lose the constant. That is one place that we lose the constant. But in our case, there's another case, another place that we lose the constant too.
I guess maybe the constant will only depend on the causal dimension that you lose. So that would be nicer than, you know, if the constant only depends on the causal dimension and not the dimension of the ambient manifold, not the big N, just on the K.
Right, but even in a case when co dimension is 1, they lose the best constant already.
Yes, but this constant depends on the dimension. N or
well, they have a constant which is also dependent on dimension, but somehow it's not the best one.
But from the same notion, can you tell me, is it correct or absolutely wrong that say K convex means the projection on subspace of dimension K would be convex? That one dimension means the projection on one dimension, three dimensions? No?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so, yeah. Right, just the number of the elementary symmetric functions are of the right sign. Right, that's true. So this is Castilian's proof on the Michael-Simon inequality. So from there, we're going to talk about the proof of star K prime inequality in our main theorem. So the obvious choice of our F would be sigma K minus 1 of L over the integral of that. So this is probability on the submanifold. And we will use the Castilian's construction to get this inequality. F times Jacobian of E is less or equal than determinant, as I mentioned before. So this is what where we follow from Castilian's method. And starting from now, it's totally different because we're going to deal with the fully nonlinear quantity of the curvature. So we need to take some alpha power on both sides of this inequality 1 and multiply with this very strange notion of the fully nonlinear notion of the curvature with the convex potential. And by using several ingredients. So the first one would be the Newton-Maclaurin inequality, and the second one would be the Gordon's inequality, which is only true in the gamma k cone. And then the concavity of the sigma k over sigma l operator. So basically, all those techniques are commonly used when we study the a priori estimate for the fully nonlinear equation. So with all those things, we will obtain that the integral of sigma k minus 1 times some suitable power of j Jacobian of the projection over this integral of sigma k minus 1 of L would be less or equal than this guy, where A is just a positive constant. So later on, I'm going to present our main technical proposition, which is proposition 1, which states that this inequality from here to here is true. So note that in this inequality, on the right-hand side, there's no information about V. There's no information about the convex potential. So here, the constant does not depend on the V either. It only depends on dimension K as well as this constant A here. So if we assume proposition 1 for a moment and we get this inequality 2, then you see that we can simply integrate over the Grassmannian to remove this Jacobian of E, and we will achieve the star K prime inequality. So integrate 2 over Grassmannian and would imply star K prime inequality. So at this moment, I owe you the main technical proposition, which is stated as follows. So if V bar is the smooth function defined as before, which is the extension of the Brownian's potential, then there exists a constant A such that this inequality is true for K plus 1 convex domain. So there are two things that we should point out here. So first thing is that we assume in this proposition that V bar is smooth. However, in general, the Brownian's map is not smooth at all. And the way to apply this proposition in our main in our proof of the main theorem would be using the approximation argument as well as Caffarelli's regularity result about Brownian's map. So how shall we do that? So Caffarelli's regularity result says that if we put additional assumptions on the domain, on the domain, and if we also assume that this initial measure and this target measure both have upper and lower bounds, then the Brownian's map would have regularity. And how to apply this regularity in our case? So remember that we project from the submanifold down to the linear space E, and there's no way to say that this domain, the support of this measure would be convex. And also there's no way to say that this push forward measure have upper and lower bound, because Jacobian of E could go to zero, and if you do that, it will give you very big potential, a very big density function. However, you see that in this proposition, back to the proposition A, this inequality, again on the right hand side, doesn't involve the a priori estimate of the Brownian's map at all. It doesn't involve any information about the regularity of the Brownian's map. That's why we can just use some density function to approximate our original density function and use the proposition 1 and then we just let epsilon goes to zero. And on the right hand side, we don't see any information about V, that's why it doesn't match. So this, so by applying Caffarelli's regularity result, we don't need to worry about the smoothness of Bernier's map. So finally, I'm going to talk about how to prove the main proposition. So this proposition is true for any k. So I'm going to first talk about those special cases when k is equal to 2 or 3 and hope to indicate what happens in the general case. So when k is equal to 2, the situation becomes much simpler because you don't have much terms to deal with. And here we need to use a few facts which are stated in this lemma. So basically sigma 2 of Hessian of V is, after some simplification, you will get the Ricci curvature times VIVJ. And the second thing is that this Ricci curvature, if you write it in terms of the extrinsic curvature tensor, it is bounded by the sigma 2 of second fundamental form if we assume it is in three convex domain. So this is true only when it is three convex. And finally, we will use the symmetry of the polarization of the sigma 2 operator. And this is the technique that we usually use in studying the fully nonlinear equation, sigma k equation. So the proof of those three statements follows from like those formulas. One of it is rewrite the Ricci curvature in terms of the second fundamental form, and from there we see the relationship between Ricci curvature with sigma 2 and derivative of sigma 3. And also, we assume it is in three cone, and by Gardner's inequality, this quantity would be positive. That's why it would be less or equal than sigma 2 times the metric G. And the second fact is that the symmetry of the polarization of sigma 2 operator, also due to the Kodaze equation, we will get the integral is equal to 0. Okay. And when k is equal to 3, it involves a little bit more computation. Basically, we need to introduce the k-linear form of sigma k. This is the way to polarize the sigma k. Okay. So by polarization, I just mean that I want to make it a linear map in each variable. And when every variable is equal to the same a, then it gives back to the sigma k. And to define it, after defining it in this way, sigma k could be represented in terms of the linearized form of that. Basically, you take the matrix, you time it with the Newton potential, it gives you back the sigma k itself. So the key fact in this computation is that if my matrix is in gamma k plus 1 cone, then it would imply the Newton potential is bigger than 0. And also, if you take k matrices which are all in this gamma k plus 1 cone, then the Newton potential of this guy would be greater than zero. Right. So the proof of the proposition when k is equal to 3 involves the following three steps. The first step, again, we need to use some symmetry of the polarization. Basically, if we have two second fundamental forms there and only one Hessian there, this integral would be 0. And secondly, if there's only one second fundamental form and there are two Hessians there, then it would give some curvature terms times Vi times Vj, or times Vm times Vj. And this curvature term, again, if you write it very carefully, it would give you this formula. And this sigma 4 comes in because this 4 convex comes in because this term, again, is positive if it is in 4 con. And step 3 is a little bit similar to step 2, except that there are two terms. So this term is basically positive, that you don't it's not positive, but it's almost positive, because if you don't look at d square v, but if you like look at d bar square v bar, then it is definitely positive. And you have two terms to deal with. And in this special case, you need to use the fact that vij could be represented as v bar ij plus the second fundamental form. And this t3 and t2 are positive if we replace v by v bar. Okay, so these three steps basically give us some idea on how to deal with the general k case. Okay, basically the idea is that whether we can simply look at the polarization formula, and we look at the case when there are 3V, when there are only 2V, and when there's only 1V. So this is our first strategy to deal with the general K case. However, when K is big, this situation is not true. Basically, I mean that if I take arbitrarily M number of V there, and if I look this polarization integral, and I want to prove this inequality, so however, this inequality is not true when k is big. So this is the difficulty for the general k case. So instead, we prove some other statement, which is the following. So okay, this quantity could not be bounded by our favorable quantity. However, if I add some lower order quantities, so here, if I want to bound this guy by the favorable term, but we can't do that because there are counterexamples. So what I want to do say is that if I add some more terms, lower order terms, then I can still I can still bound it by the favorable term. And this is how we basically deal with this difficulty in the general K case. Okay. So let me finish by stating what is the idea here. So the idea is here is just with the help of the lower order terms, the highest order term can be bounded by the favorable term sigma k of L. So finally, there are basically two open questions. that we would like to answer but we haven't been able to do is the first question is that whether this omega belongs to gamma k plus 1 cone necessary. So is it possible to reduce it to simply gamma k cone? And the second question that we want to answer is that is there any way to say what is the best constant and how to prove that? Okay, I guess if we can use this method to prove the best constant, then Michael-Simon inequality's best constant could be like predicted in a similar way, that it will be very desirable to study this problem in the future. Okay, I guess I stop here.